They should be exciting, anticipation plus, but that's not what elections are doing to us. Today it feels more like we're being harassed, and the excitement is that soon it'll be in the past. Hey there, this is where the arts and culture of West Wisconsin congregates and converses. Welcome to Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. We're back. This week, aside from its good being back, we focus on the continuing saga of performance during a pandemic. And actually, a pandemic makes it sound like this is just something that comes along every once in a while, like a leap year. I should probably say the pandemic because it still has some startle attached to it. Anyway, Robert Baca is here to tell us about how his young jazz musicians are coping and course correcting. Cellist Josh Airy, who has some musical roots in West Wisconsin, returns to help the Northwoods Strings stay in touch. Dr. Michael Axelrod is a university psychology professor who shares what he's been observing the past few months. And Catherine Thomas had a busy week talking with artist Deb Stahl Kinsley about a current exhibit and plans for a spring tour. And I'll hold the ball as KT puts her foot into one, thus kicking off this late October episode. There's an upcoming festival theater production, an all-audio version of Stuart Little, and Catherine was able to catch the visiting director, Ryan Stevens.
Why don't we get to know a little bit about you? No, you're not from around Western Wisconsin, so where do you come from? And how did you end up working with a theater in Western Wisconsin?
Absolutely. So I am from South Carolina originally. I went to school at the University of South Carolina for my undergraduate degree. There I met Brooke Smith, who now is the arts and education director at Festival Theater. We worked together a bit in college and stayed connected professionally afterwards. She became an intern at Festival Theater a few summers ago, and then from that internship got the job as the arts and education director. From there, when they were looking for a director for Stuart Little, they reached out to me, and I'd been over to see a number of the shows. I'm a big fan of all the work they do at Festival Theater. Big fan of the Sacred Falls area. Beautiful country, and I never had cheese curds before until I went there, so I owe y'all huge for changing my life that way. So I was very happy to be able to come on board and work with Festival Theater in that capacity.
Your background in theater is pretty extensive, from classical theater and Shakespeare to clowning, which sounds pretty interesting. You also say on your website that you seek to uphold representation for the unheard, ignored, and unusual. So how are you putting those different elements of your background to work in this production of Stuart Little?
Sure. I mean, it is one of the many challenges of our current situation. In the theater world, we cannot physically, you know, be near each other or be near an audience. Adapting any work into a sort of radio play format involves some lateral thinking and some like creative problem solving. Stuart Little, the script we have, is a lucky one for us to choose to sort of adapt into this format. There's a narrator, so a lot of the lines are already narrating things that we would be able to see on stage, but now we just have to imagine in the radio. And from that, you know, that is a sort of skill set that comes a lot in older styles of theater, where before they invented sets and such, a lot of dialogue and a lot of writing was very narrating, dialogue forward. In Shakespeare, when there was no set design, you'd have characters be like, well, now we're here in the forest, and now we have left the castle, so everyone in the audience is like, okay, they're in a forest now, let me imagine that. So the radio play connects to the theater history background that way. In terms of how we're, you know, upholding the voices that aren't usually heard, I think children count in that. I think that the voices of children and their creative ideas is often sort of stuck to the side in children's theater as a label, and we think of it as sort of like they're forced to sit at the kids' table, like in a family gathering. But these child actors we have are every bit as creative and excited and engaged and full of great, fresh ideas as any, you know, fully grown adult actor I've ever worked with. And I think that that energy and that youthful excitement and willingness to try anything is really, really encouraging. It gave me a lot of needed inspiration during this whole process. I think that that is something that any adult artist should do their best to try and stay plugged into, that sort of childlike wonder and joy at making something new.
Yeah, and you had a lot of participation. I think you have two different casts for this production.
We do. Yes, we have two entirely different casts featuring 9 youth actors in each cast. That's a total of 18 youth actors, kids from Sacro Falls, kids from Dresser, kids from Osceola, kids from Luck and beyond. It's a real moment of the communities coming together in this great sort of unifying exercise. And I think that that is really, really part of the joy, too. I always love working with a big cast. Getting to work with two big casts is even better because you just get so many other voices in the room. You get so many other flavors in the pot, as it were. And it really lets everyone shine and show off their best qualities. So, yeah, having two huge casts full of separate actors has been a great advantage for this show.
We've talked a little bit about how the production as an audio play is different from usual theater productions that would be going on at the Festival Theater. Is it going to be like old-time radio drama? That was a really popular show on Wisconsin Public Radio for a long time. That's recently been off the air, but I'm just wondering, is it like that?
We certainly want it to be. We definitely took inspiration from old-time radio drama and from old radio serials of, you know, the 40s and 50s, just in the sort of energy and the speed with which we are going from scene to scene, and the sense of, like, you're being told something by an old friend, and the sense of, as an audience member, being welcomed into this world and this story. Our sound design is also taking a lot of cues from the sort of Foley work and the really specific sounds and sound effects of old-time radio shows. So, yes, that is our intention, is to sort of recreate that style of storytelling.
Excellent. I think you'll have a really big audience.
Great.
For that, from all those radio lovers. Usually, you know, you'd buy a ticket for a performance and you'd show up at the time and on the date of the performance, but it's kind of different, but also the same in this case. Tell us how we can sign up for the Stuart Little production.
Right. Like you said, the recordings are all online, but people do need to register with Festival Theater's box office to get the password-protected link. That is a easy thing to do, though. All you need to do is go to the Festival Theater's website under tickets, and then the Youth and Family Series 2020. You'll be directed to a link to fill out a form to request the link. It is free. But as a way to give back to our community during this difficult time, since there's no cost at all for ticket prices, quote-unquote, donations are accepted and appreciated. You can donate through the website or by sending in a donation. There will be a link to donate with the password-protected video. So, to get access to this video when it goes up this week, you just need to either go to the Festival Theater website and follow the links to request access, or you can just email the box office, which is at festivaltheaterboxoffice@gmail.com. Either way, we'll get you on the list.
Excellent. Ryan Stevens directs the audio play production of Stuart Little at the Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls, October 23rd, 24th, and 25th. More information at that website he was just mentioning, festivaltheater.org. Thanks so much, Ryan.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Catherine. Coming up on Spectrum West, a jazz groove of a different variety, artists adjusting, and our COVID consciousness. But first, Northwoods Strings is a rural Northwest Wisconsin musical community that provides lessons and performance opportunities on violin, viola, cello, and bass. They're also creative, as in String Thing Hangouts, virtual sessions featuring guest artists. Coming Monday, it's Josh Airy, a renowned cellist, formerly of Northwest Wisconsin. We called him in Indiana to see how and what he's doing. Indiana is a musical state from an educational vantage point. Tell me about, briefly, Columbus, Indiana. You're kind of involved with the symphony there. What kind of a town is Columbus?
Columbus, Indiana is a lovely, fairly small town south of Indianapolis. It's actually known for its architecture primarily. It's world-renowned for mid-century modern architecture. The town actually has 2 symphony orchestras, of which I direct one. So we have a great concert season, typically in person.
Do you have, like, dueling symphonies?
Yeah.
Is it competitive?
Yeah, that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
You know, it would take too long to mention all of your activities, but the bottom line is this. To be a musician, you have to play music, and you do a lot of playing. How do you weed out the many opportunities that come along?
My career has been through a number of permutations. You know, I've been fortunate to have the opportunity to do a number of different things. I'm very glad to have a lot of different kinds of opportunities to play and make music in one way or another, whether it's cello or conducting or teaching or administrative. And yes, right now I have a trio called the Sylvan Trio, flute, cello, and piano. And that, in addition to the orchestra and a arts center I run here in South Bend, I do keep pretty busy. So it's always a juggling act, but it's good.
It's almost as if you just cannot play too much music.
I would agree. Absolutely. And especially these days, you know, amidst these really extraordinary times, music is ever more important, I think, and a great way to reach people.
I want to point out to our audience and remind them that you were also a contributor to the arts in West Wisconsin as past conductor of the Red Cedar Symphony, and I think you might be happy to know that just recently in the mail I received their newsletter. They are not performing, as you might guess, but they're doing just fine.
Oh, I'm so thrilled to hear that, and I do keep in touch with some of the fine folks from the Red Cedar, and some of them join me in the summertime at the Woodland Chamber Music Workshop that I direct up in Tofty, Minnesota. And we, too, weren't able to have an in-person workshop this past summer, but it's wonderful to hear that the arts and music especially is alive in your neck of the woods. And I know that there's so many great people who really believe and feel passionately about that. I'm not worried about coming out of this pandemic. Music is going to help us do that and be better than ever when we're able to hear it live and in person once again.
Your bio says that you are, quote, an outspoken proponent for music and arts in education and the community, end quote. I say good for you. Do you get to work with young people a lot?
I do, and I think it's so important for any musician to find capacity to do that. In my role now with the Community Arts Center and school that I direct here in South Bend, I've really found it really empowering to work with different community leaders and organizations to bring music in all sorts of different ways, educational programs, performances, classes, lessons. So that's been a real joy these past five some odd years now. But you know, whether you're a conductor or an electric guitar player or someone who just likes to sing in the shower, and everybody has a little bit of music to share. One of my favorite recent quotes by the great Yo-Yo Ma, find a way to share music just a little bit every day with someone who might be in need of a little music is what we each can do to help us get through these difficult times.
I think from every musician I've talked to over the years, they get as much or more out of it as the people they're sharing it with, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's nothing like teaching to make you a better player and better at what you do.
I think I'll coin a phrase. It's better to give than receive. You like that? Okay, good. So it applies to music, too. Good for us. Josh Airey with us. The reason we're talking to him, other than the fact that he's a good friend and does a lot of interesting stuff, he's a cellist and conductor, as he alluded earlier, is an event, and it's coming up, and we'll get to that right now. We can get to talking about the life of a musician during a pandemic simply by talking about what you're doing with the Northwoods Strings. These things are called String Thing Hangouts. Tell us about your involvement.
Yeah, I'm so honored to be a part of this initiative by the Northwoods Strings, offering virtual programming when obviously the students can't get together in the way that they would have to make music in ensemble or perhaps in lessons. So, you know, the virtual realm is actually full of opportunity. I'm happy to be a part of that, to come from Indiana virtually, talk about my life in music. What I'm really going to be spending a lot of time on this String Things Hangout, which is kind of like a virtual presentation over the course of an hour. And we're going to be talking about how music has changed over the ages and how we can, as musicians, interpret that music in different ways. So, we're going to start by learning about the Baroque and then the classical era, then the Romantic, and finally the contemporary era of music making with some of the great composers that are alive and with us today.
Mm-hmm. Is that some of the joy of being a musician, a professional musician, getting to interpret music?
It really is, and music is a special form of art. It exists live anyway, in the moment, and really only in that moment. And to anyone who hears it, much less makes it, it means something different to each of us, you know, stirs a different reaction, a different emotion, makes us think of something all our own, but yet we're sharing that collectively, or at least, you know, when we could do so live. So I think that's a really special thing that a musician can do and to give to his or her audience, is that idea of hearing something really special and unique, always changing, it's never going to be the same again. Mm-hmm. And the reaction that an audience has is a really special thing, knowing that that's happening out there. People are enjoying the music, and perhaps they're each thinking about something different, but all in the same space. I think that's a really cool thing.
I think at the very beginning of this experience we're going through, people kept worrying that the virtual connection was too impersonal. I don't know, I'm getting this feeling, even after this is over, we're going to find a use for virtual that we never imagined before.
Yeah, I agree with you. It has been really heartening to see how different arts organizations and artists have made use of the virtual realm, you know, out of necessity these days. And it certainly seems like, you know, as people get more comfortable on the creation side, but also on the receiving side of that, you know, Zoom meetings are with us to stay, but, you know, what can you do in a Zoom meeting? Well, you can talk about and play music. You can interact and have a great event, shall we say, just like the Northwood Strings event coming up.
I hope that you and I, and you and our audience, keep in touch. Once a Western Wisconsinite, always a Western Wisconsinite. Keep us posted. Let us know how you're doing, and we'd love to hear from you.
I certainly will do that. Thank you, Al. I really appreciate the opportunity.
There you go. Good guy, good music, good idea. Northwoods Strings. It's Monday late afternoon. To reserve your Zoom invitation, email this address, nwstringsmusic@gmail.com. And their website is nwstrings.org. This is Spectrum West on WPR, and support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Marquardt Toyota, dedicated to providing an enjoyable and stress-free buying process for almost 50 years, with welcoming facilities and personalized service. Details are at marquardttoyota.com. Well, we've talked a lot about the pandemic and its effects without really tapping the experience and wisdom found in the field of psychology. Dr. Michael Axelrod is a professor of psychology and director of the Human Development Center at UW Eau Claire, where things continue to evolve.
We've got some faculty doing traditionally in-person class totally online. Other classes are like this hybrid model where like half the students come on Monday, the other half come on Wednesday, and then those that don't go on one of those days are able to access a live stream of the class, which is good too, because there's been scenarios where we've had students that have had to like quarantine, or maybe they're even positive for COVID and that they've had to do the live stream. But I actually teach primarily graduate students. So my classes are smaller, and we've made the case that you have to have them in person. So my classes are in person, and quite honestly, I feel fairly safe. Everybody's masked up, seated 6 feet apart or more. So I think the university's done pretty well.
I got to tell you, just within your titles and your accomplishments, which include professor, psychology department chair, institutional review board, protection of human subjects, co-editor, school-based behavioral intervention case studies, author, behavior analysis for school psychologists, co-author, Great Myths of Adolescence. That last one could be an entire program by itself. I find myself really wanting to know about the great myths of adolescence. And to that, you will say, well, Al, read the book. And I may, but we'll have to talk about that sometime. So thanks for being our guest here on Spectrum West. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Al.
There was a time when I was not formally, but an armchair psychology student during my young adult years, when lots of stuff seemed kind of unfamiliar and real world pressure was displacing the Pollyanna world of growing up. I found myself a bit uncomfortable and I did not like it. I started reading books. There was one I remember called The Mind Alive, the iconic passages of the 1970s. I even subscribed to Psychology Today magazine for a couple of years. I don't know that all that made me any smarter, but it might have simply taken my mind off my problems and also assured me that I wasn't alone. At that time, and I guess since then, I've oversimplified the definition of psychology as the art of finding answers and developing perspective. How does that sit with you?
I think that's good. I think that really, if you want to try to think about boiling down the world of psychology, I think that does it. I think one of the challenges that the field of psychology has experienced was the sort of splintering of different disciplines within the larger field of psychology. And for example, we have behavioral psychology, we have applied psychology, we have social psychology, evolutionary psychology, experimental psychology. Wow. I can go on and on. Mm-hmm. But I think how you've described it really speaks to what psychology can provide society.
Some of your formal clinical training was through, and you worked at, I still call it Boys Town, in Omaha, a place I visited nearly every time I stop in Omaha to see one of my sisters, mm-hmm. and a place to which I've happily donated over the years.
Sure.
He ain't heavy, he's my brother.
Yeah.
I imagine that was quite a marvelous experience, and you worked with a lot of Whitey Marshes in your career.
I like that you have got the reference. Yes, absolutely. That's where I cut my teeth, so to speak, in terms of working with kids and adolescents and adults, quite honestly. As far as a place to get some formal training and mentorship, it was wonderful. Experiences were great, and I loved it so much. Everyone is there to help kids. You know, obviously the clinical staff for there for the work that they do with kids, but everybody, including those in the machine shop and those taking care of the grounds, I mean, they're really there for kids. As we used to say, nobody ever got rich working at Boys Town. People work there in whatever capacity because they have a true calling to help others.
When you go there, you don't want to leave, even mm-hmm. when you go as a visitor. I'm so glad this is here.
Al, that couldn't resonate more with me. I went there with the intention of doing a one-year internship, and I was there 8 years.
Oh, wow. There you go. You got hooked, too. We're on the phone with Dr. Michael Axelrod. He's director of the Human Development Center, UW-Eau Claire, and a professor in the psychology department. Psychology and its practitioners are working in very interesting times when people are feeling the effects of a pandemic and its byproducts, fear, isolation, radical change. Tell me how the last 7 months have changed your routine.
Yeah, I think of a couple of skills, if you will, or maybe more broadly, ways of sort of moving about daily life that have really changed and I suspect are really challenging for people, one of which is just flexibility. As a parent, as an employee, as an employer, as a friend, as a neighbor, I think people that are struggling are people that oftentimes struggle with flexibility. I think for me as a psychologist, one of the points that stands out most is, particularly early on in all of this, just the social separation that occurred and people feeling as if they were isolated. Fortunately, technology has allowed us to connect in new ways with one another. But I still think about, for example, kids in school scenarios where maybe they're doing a lot of their education remotely or online, and they're in scenarios where they are isolated socially from others. That can be very challenging, particularly for pre-adolescents and adolescents. The social interaction not only is important in terms of their psychological health, but also the development of social skills. You can't develop social skills unless you're engaging others socially. Then for adults, of course, just the stresses that we experience oftentimes are alleviated through the social interactions we have with family and friends. And that really changed. And we have to be very thankful for technology in this regard, that we've been able to use it to, at least in some ways, maintain some connections with friends, family, and loved ones.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier that, for the most part, you are instructing graduate students. We've all searched for silver linings. Mm-hmm. I would have to think you couldn't have asked for a more unique teaching moment.
Yes, absolutely. We search for teachable moments around flexibility and problem solving, and hope that those opportunities come up in our clinical training of future school psychologists here at the university. From day one of this, we've had to work collaboratively with our students and just even among the staff and our collaborating partners in the community to problem solve through common and not so common issues.
Students, adolescents all the way down, when we're young, we're flexible physically. Is that true psychologically? How are they doing?
You know, I think flexibility to some degree is a temperamental quality. Some people are born just more psychologically, emotionally, behaviorally flexible than others.
Uh-huh.
A lot of it develops over time as kids are exposed to situations in which they have to be flexible. And those kids that are not exposed to situations that require flexibility oftentimes don't go on to be very good at dealing with flexibility as young adults and adults. You know, you mentioned silver lining. You know, I really do think we've had opportunities to overcome lots of adversity, the challenges, including the challenges of having to be flexible. I really do hope, when I think about kids and adolescents, that the adults in their lives have really been supportive of them in all the turmoil and really encouraged them to develop skills that allow them to deal with adversity.
Psychologically, has this been kind of good for us? Should we be stronger from now on?
Some of us will,
okay.
Absolutely. I think there's still folks out there, this has been really challenging, feeling socially isolated, feeling as if there's no silver lining or there's no light at the end of the tunnel, and that maybe there's even no tunnel yet.
To those people, what does a psychologist suggest?
Usually psychologists have very convoluted answers to just about everything. But in this case, Al, it's very simple. Connect with others. Engage your social support network. If you don't have a reliable social support network, really reach out to professionals. This is certainly not a time to feel isolated or lonely. For those of us that have been able to use our social support network in positive ways, this whole situation has required us to be flexible, to problem solve new situations, to collaborate with our partners, our family, our colleagues in different ways. Many of us have had to do some soul searching. What do we want to prioritize? For many of us, these kinds of bigger questions unfold over time. And to have it sort of thrust upon us unknowingly, it creates additional challenges. But nevertheless, I think for many of us, it's a matter of thinking, okay, how am I going to prioritize my life? What's important to me? And understand that you have to give some things less attention.
As you can tell, I could talk about this forever. I find it fascinating, and we will chat again. Dr. Michael Axelrod, thank you so much for being with us on WPR. Keep up all the great work.
You're welcome, Al. Thank you.
Spectrum West on WPR, Robert Baca on what young jazz students are doing to keep the music alive and well, even when so much around us feels like the other side of that coin. Before that, Amory, Wisconsin, and surrounding area is another artistic hotbed featuring notable people and locations. So we asked Catherine Thomas to find out how those folks are faring in extraordinary times. Artist and frequent event participant Deb Stull Kinsley took the inquiring phone call.
You are a watercolor artist, and you're also one of the member artists of the Artsy Gallery in Amory. How did
yes.
it get started?
We're in our 10th year. It was just founded by a group of individuals dedicated to fine art in the Amory community. This has kind of been a really fun adventure for me. We moved in about 7 years ago, and have found that it is such a rich and diverse art community. It's been really fun to find all the people that are just so creative and dedicated to showing fine art in this area.
Well, during pandemics like the one that we're in, artists keep being creative, and the Artsy Gallery continues to put on exhibits. How creative have you had to get to keep that happening?
A couple of challenges. One is the reality of the pandemic, going through the lockdown and finding that most of the venues for art were closed during that time. It's been really great to find out that there's such support in this community for artists, so we have kind of banded together and, you know, done what we can to help each other, because it has been a real financial loss. Many of the members in our gallery and in other galleries in the area do the summer sales and things like that, and they were all canceled this year. It's just been a real financial hardship for artists. So at one point in May or June, there was a decision of, should we open in the midst of this? Are the health concerns outweighing the economic point of opening again? And we've come to a balance, I think, where we're open 3 days a week, and then we can rotate our volunteer members, the workers in the gallery, so that's worked out really well. And the ones that feel okay doing it have been coming to the front to volunteer to work. And then others that may have health concerns or loved ones at home that they just don't want to compromise, they can do other things if they want to in the gallery to help out and not be working with the public. And the other challenge is just being creative when you're kind of in that lockdown and there aren't a lot of venues open. How do you maintain your motivation, get up every day and go to the studio and get work done when there isn't necessarily any place to exhibit?
How are the artists keeping in touch with that support that you're talking about?
Well, email and texting is a real big thing for us. And then just being able to, as members, find out that there's opportunities someplace where they're quick to share with each other. Here's an opportunity, and maybe you'd like to do this. Some pop-up art shows have come about this summer that we may not have heard about, but others in the group have alerted the whole group, you know, here's an opportunity, and maybe this won't work for you, but maybe you can pass it on to some other artists in the area. So I think that's been a really good thing of helping each other to find what are some other avenues that you could do to be creative.
And how about from the public? Do you get very many visitors, and what are you hearing from them?
It's been really positive in the Artsy Gallery in Amory. We've been really so thankful for people that come out. Amory is got a real focus on shop local. We've tied into that at the gallery. We're finding out there's a lot of people that are making Amory more of a destination, coming from the cities and from Eau Claire, places in Wisconsin, just because they've heard about other businesses in the Amory community that are really trying to market themselves.
So if I visit the gallery, what's on show right now?
Artsy Gallery is really a unique gallery. Artsy is more like a community to me, I think. Real special. We have a dedicated artist committee. Every month, they take down all the paintings in the front of the gallery. Every month, we have four new featured artists in that space. And so it makes it an ever-changing atmosphere as people come into the gallery. We're just finishing October, and we have four artists that are in there. And then in November, we have four more coming in. Three of them are members. Tin Cat Studio. Tin Cat Studio does impressionistic photography and encaustic work. Wynn Herberger does pottery. Nan Reinhardt does fused glass. And then our featured guest is Kay Brathelt Hostvedt. She's a professional artist and independent art instructor in Eau Claire. She'll be showing an exhibit of soft pastels, mostly landscape and a celebration of the land and Wisconsin's rural environment. And usually the artists are bringing in 20 of their pieces, so it's a significant show of their work. The theme for November is called Kaleidoscope, and I think that's such a fun word on a gray and dreary day.
Oh, for sure. You can find examples of the art Deb's been talking about on the Artsy Gallery website, and also art that's for sale, gallery.org.
They can arrange shipping. If they live in the area, they can just come up and pick up their painting at the gallery, or the artist may even deliver it if they're in the local area. So they can avoid shipping costs, too. And We're just trying to do everything we can to encourage people to shop locally.
Now, you're also involved with the Earth Arts Spring Tour. That was canceled this year because of the pandemic, but you're hoping you can do it in May of 2021. What's the outlook for that at this point?
I think it's real positive. At the current moment, we're looking at a registration deadline of October 30th. At this point, it will include artists in their studios, artists in gallery and art organizations, as well as businesses that support the arts called Tour Oasis. Right now, we have a great number of artists that are going to participate in this. We've really been encouraged by the number of businesses that have stepped forward and said, yes, I know it was canceled last year, and it's been a hard year, but I'm so looking forward to it, and yes, we'll be a tour oasis for this coming year. And that's a business that offers refreshments as well as one or two of the members exhibit their work there.
I like to hear about collaboration between business and art.
It's been just wonderful. And I know when you reach out, could you sponsor it? 99% of the time, it's just, yes, we can. And if they can't, we're struggling financially and it just isn't feasible. We've had great support from our organizations and businesses in our communities.
And I just want to remind listeners, too, that your art is on display if they're interested in seeing what you're up to at the Artsy Gallery. You've also been part of the Earth Arts Spring Tour as well in the past.
That's exactly right. And this year I'll be at the Amory Ale Works, and they have a renovated and restored barn. The ale works and the tap rooms are in the lower level of it, along with this lovely outdoor patio space. And then on the main floor, or the loft in the barn, is where they have a gallery. And so I'll be in that loft area of the barn.
Deb Stahl-Kinsley is a watercolor artist and a member artist of the Artsy Gallery in Amory. Their website, artzgallery.org, offers information on current artists, art for sale, and much more. And the 2021 Earth Art Spring Tour of the Upper St. Croix Valley, they also have a website where you can register. The registration date's coming up on October 30th. That website is earthartswi.org. Deb, thanks so much.
Thank you so much, Catherine.
Yeah, I echo that. Thank you so much, Catherine. Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Support for WPR comes from Charter Bank, committed to investing in partnerships and offering Charter Bank business services with small business loans, treasury management services, and a variety of checking accounts. Details are at charterbank.bank. Take the cold from snow, tell the trees don't grow, tell the wind don't blow, 'cause it's easier. Take the spark from love, make the rain fall up, 'cause that's easier to do. No, you can't stop the music, nobody can stop the music. Some 1980 lyrics from the Village People there, but an inability to stop the music has got to be the anthem of the UW-Eau Claire Jazz Studies program. They've been finding ways to keep the music going, as in Tunes on Tuesdays and a lot more. I stopped by and talked with Jazz Studies director Robert Baca earlier this week. I have to tell you, I was looking through some past documents in my Spectrum West file, and I found the announcement or the press release letting people know that there would be no Eau Claire Jazz Festival, no 52nd Street.
This last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So tell me about that gut-wrenching time, because it was the first time in well over 50 years.
History. We were traveling down to Milwaukee. And we were halfway down, and my iPhone lit up like a Christmas tree. Texts and notifications, and so I had to pull over and see what was going on. And I read that they were closing down businesses, and they were closing down larger event halls. We were talking already with board members for Eau Claire Jazz. We had a plan, but we wanted to wait until the health department did not make it possible. And then that word came, and that's when we shut everything down.
And just briefly, 2021, what are you looking at?
We are going to have some type of jazz festival this year, what it's going to be. We don't know. We have been researching and keeping our fingers on everything large that has been happening all over the world. And there have been jazz festivals successful online. We're considering that. We always bloom where we're planted, Al. And if we were online and virtual, we would be open to education from some of the largest jazz artists in the world because they don't have to leave home.
Sure, exactly.
And then they're just there for an hour. So we're exploring that idea. We're exploring what if schools are able to function in a normal way for this next semester and they're able to get their jazz ensembles going in January and February. Well, if everything is open up, then we could do something that's in person. One other factor that we have to look at is what if things open up mid-semester? If it's mid-semester, then schools are just getting their ensembles together in March and might not want to opt to come to a festival as it stands now. So in that way, we will adapt the jazz festival to be more of a beginning of the season jazz festival rather than something at the end of the year.
Oh, yeah. As we've been alluding, it's been a tough year. We also said goodbye to Jimmy Heath early in 2020. Such an honor for me to record a conversation with and meet him. All the people you've been able to hang out with in all these years of your involvement with the Jazz Festival. You have 35 years coming up here at UW-Eau Claire.
Can you believe it?
So the privilege of hanging out with all these mega stars.
The biggest thing I learned is that they're all just normal people. Some are exotic, like what we might read about. For the most part, they're normal people. They really connect with our students. Almost every person that comes to Eau Claire comments on how comfortable they feel around our students because they play well. They're confident, good human beings.
Teaching is such a big part of so many artists' lives, and I'm talking big artists.
Right.
Good for them.
Because, well, when you're just playing every night, that's one type of giving. But when you get to speak to an individual directly and form a relationship, especially the members of the ensemble, where you're with them for hours after hours. Tell you a short side story about that. We had a scholarship fund from one of our donors. What would you like to do with this money? I'd like this to go for a student that's really invested in the program and really contributed to it. And that means practicing and really practiced, really contributed. And I'd like to be able to send them on a trip to be with some of the top people in the field. So we've been able to do that several times. We pay for the air, we pay for the hotel, transportation, and we pay for lessons. Wow. We set out a criteria that says, would you consider lessons for 2 to 3 hours a day for 3 days with this particular student? What are they going to react to that? Is that a lot? Every single person said, you would send this one person to spend all of this time just with me? John Clayton went to John Clayton. He's not going to spend 2 to 3 hours with me. I want him to stay at my house.
Oh, boy.
And
really?
The music does that. Wow. But it connects people together, and that explains a lot of why these people are the way that they are.
Talk about an unforgettable experience for
right.
the student. We're sitting on the University of Wisconsin Eau Claire campus with Robert Baca, head of jazz studies. You know the voice, professor of trumpet, and again, since 1986. Wow. I also found a 5-page missive from Gretchen Peters. She heads the UW-Eau Claire Music and Theater Arts Department from early in this academic year, this strange one, highlighting all the things continuing to happen and ways everyone was dancing to a completely different tune this year. You've seen your colleagues, I wager, in a new brighter light. It must make you proud to be affiliated with such a flexible, committed group of pros.
It all comes down to the chancellor. This chancellor, we've seen more happen than, speaking of 35 years, than ever before. And there's such a relationship there. Dr. Peters is just awesome. Her vision, bringing the music department in the 21st century to do things that are going to be practical for music students once they graduate. And that's been an emphasis of hers since she's been there. Yeah, and we're all working together. We're all doing different kinds of things. We're very blessed as a jazz ensemble. In our room that we practice in, it fits social distancing perfectly. So we're able to practice as a full ensemble because everybody is 6 to 8 feet apart. And the expression on the students' faces when we got done running through our first number of just, it feels so good to play again.
Have I seen masks with holes in them?
Yeah.
For playing instruments?
That's right. Well, that's another good thing the music department did was a lot of study. There were several studies that were out there. I think the most amount of money was put into a particular study that was done by the College Band Directors Association. So our band director, John Stewart, took the lead and gave us a report on the findings for that. And our big thing is aerosol spray coming out of the instrument. So we have to have bell covers and then we have to wear masks. But we're just doing great. The jazz area, we went over some basics in the syllabus. We couldn't say what we were going to do for a concert or if we were going to do concerts because things are just evolving. But now we have a good handle on it. Tonight and tomorrow night, we're recording part of a Broadway show in our new recording studio with our new faculty engineer, part of bringing us into the 21st century, Lena Sutter, over at the Pablo Center. So we're doing that for a couple of nights. Then we're going to do a concert exhibiting the Black Experience in the next 2 weeks, pre-recording that concert in Jamf. And this is not just Jazz One. This is all the jazz ensembles. Mm-hmm. And then we're switching gears and doing this premiere brand new work of Holst's The Planets, reimagined. So it's been put into a jazz format, and it has a jazz beat to it, and we're going to be doing that in December.
You simply cannot stop the music.
You cannot stop the music, right.
Tell me about Tunes on Tuesdays. I went to YouTube, and I looked at Rhapsody in Blue. There was the album cover, Jazz in Clearwater, where everyone was on boats, including a baby grand piano on a pontoon.
That's right. Well, that was right at the very beginning, not even a year, into repositioning digital images.
Okay.
So that is a digital image of Professor Cecchini playing in a concert hall, re-exhibited onto...
So this was Photoshopped?
It was Photoshopped. It was the very beginning.
You didn't put a piano on a pontoon.
We did not put a grand piano on a pontoon.
You had me hooked.
In those early days, all of the title tracks were all a student composition. When we started to do photographs for the different CDs, they're for recruitment. We were looking not just in Wisconsin, but outside of Wisconsin. It's one of the most beautiful states in the entire country. So why not exhibit the beauty of Wisconsin on the covers of these CDs? And that's what we've done on almost every CD. So this particular one, the idea came up to go into a bay. It's a bay that raised my kids skiing on. It's Moon Bay in Lake Wasota. I had a friend. He had several boats. So he said, how many do you need? And I said, how many can you bring? So I think he had 8 or 9 boats that he was pulling with his pontoon. And I said, for that, you're on the CD cover. So if you see a man sitting watching Penny Cecchini with his dog next to them, that is him. And the only thing that didn't show up that day was the float plane.
I knew there was something there.
where we would have 3 or 4 musicians sitting on the ski of the float plane playing.
Wow, that's quite a feat. I mean, just photoshopping it is almost more of a feat than getting... No, it isn't.
Yeah.
Well, see, that just dashes my whole image of that.
And she played, I think she's still actually in Eau Claire, marvelous, marvelous pianist. And we wanted to reenact the 1926 version of Rhapsody in Blue. And a classical musician plays it a certain way. Let's see. That's the classical way of playing. Well, that's not the way Gershwin meant it. Gershwin meant it to be ragtime. So she had to totally change her idea of how to play the piece. I thought she did a marvelous job.
Just to make me feel better, how many people thought that that was a real photograph?
That it was a real piano?
Everybody was in boats and there was a piano on a pontoon.
I think we did get that.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good. I feel much better now. So more on Tunes on Tuesdays.
Tunes on Tuesday, we have some interns in the jazz studies area. What I do is I get the right people on the bus. So I get people that live for this job. And then we're all able to think of ourselves as all on the same level. So they're not scared to give ideas out. And then it's not just interns that are listening to what the professor is saying. We all work together. So one of the interns, John Francis, came up with this idea of being able to help out our web page by putting examples from the different CDs. 21 CDs so far. We still have 3 CDs in the can. You can't have CDs anymore, so what do you do with something like that? Mm-hmm. Because no one has a CD player anymore. But we have 21 that are fully produced. Take one from each and take the CD cover and then promote that. He started on a certain date and made one a week, and so he said, why don't we just do it on Tuesdays?
So when are we going to hear the stuff that you're recording, like tonight and tomorrow?
If the pandemic keeps going on, the theater department is considering doing a Broadway show that was a Broadway show review, one of the shows from the group Five by Design, which was all singers from UW-Eau Claire that developed this Broadway show. And that was our original idea for it, was actually to do the entire show. And then that idea had to be moved on to something different because of the conditions. So we said, we're going to record it anyways. Mm. And so we're recording this, and then some later time we'll be able to put vocalists to it.
Thanks for taking time out of your busy day. It's always a pleasure talking with you.
Good talking to you, too.
Well, we have some people to thank. We have, let's see, there's Dean, there's Kate, there's Patrick, there's Catherine, there's Jim. Oh, and you out there. Where would this show be without you? Anytime, visit us at WPR.org to find all the Spectrum West programs neatly archived there. I hope you keep in touch. Let's see, what's coming up next week? We're working on it. A new director of one of our iconic art centers. Some theater openings. We might even have some sports on next week. That's part of the culture, isn't it? As I said, the show is taking shape. I'm Al Ross. Keep in touch. Take care of yourself. Wear a mask. Be good to each other. See you then.